This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
All right, an hour to go here on a football Monday. We usually call it Buffalo Football Monday. We can do that. It's a feel-good Monday here in Western New York. A lot of people are very happy about the result last night. 40-22. The Eagles just dominate the Kansas City Chiefs. Jalen Hurts named Super Bowl MVP. I thought it should have went to one of the defenders. No disrespect to Jalen. He was fine. He was very good. But one of the defenders on the Eagles, maybe Josh Sweat, somebody, the entire defense, whatever. Give it to Vic Fangio. I don't know. But that was how they won this game. Their defense was just incredible and swarming and smothering over the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. Joining me now on the Wester Hotline to talk about that, as well as some offseason stuff with the Buccaneers and the Steelers, two teams that he talks about and covers, and, of course, the NFL draft, is our buddy John Ledyard. John, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing great, Sal. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem at all. I mean, is that the story for you last night? Was it just how incredible the Eagles' defense dominated, especially up front?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the playoffs for a long time, I think, have been a testament to how important it is to be able to go four down and go with your front defensively, I think. And so, yeah, when Philly was able to do that at the level that they were able to do that at, and that wasn't a new thing, right? I mean, that was something that certainly had happened all season long. That's something they become known for. It's something when they beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl years ago. I mean, Howie Roseman has just understood that better than most GMs, is that you have to be able to go four down and go, not rely totally on the blitz to be able to be successful in the playoffs. And I mean, Spags has done a great job of balancing that during Kansas City's dynasty over the years, probably a better job of balancing it than other guys we've seen. Todd Bowles in the Super Bowl against Mahomes, if you remember, hardly blitzed at all in that game for a guy who was extremely blitz heavy. The 49ers have been one of the top four down and go pass rush teams in the league. So it's just an absolutely essential staple of successful defenses to get to championship-level success right now, and nobody has done it better than Philly.
No, it's just so hard to get those guys, right, John? I mean, it's a defensive coordinator's dream to have you get home with the front four. How did they do it? How did they grab these guys, get these guys? Is it just Howie Roseman and great drafting? Was it Vic Fangio's scheme? How were they able to have this type of group to be able to play without blitzing?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is great drafting, because if you look, everybody, basically, I think literally everybody that plays on their front, they've drafted. I mean, certainly all their best players, like, you know, I mean, Jalen Carter and Milton Williams stand out a lot. Nolan Smith was drafted. A lot of people really question just because how little he played at Georgia. He was my number two edge rusher in that class after Will Anderson, but a lot of people had, I think, fair questions about him. I kind of believed anyway, but I mean, I think there's all these guys, they value traits, first of all. I mean, Carter obviously is like one of the luckiest things that ever happened to a team. So you need some of that. Let's not kid ourselves. But, you know, Milton Williams was a guy who you basically had to teach to pass rush, but he had unbelievable traits. And he just barely got to rush in college. He was kind of reading run, and he was playing as a 4-eye. And so being able to just tee off and go, he just had to learn moves and how to attack people. And now he's at his breakout. And so they train and develop guys really well, but they also scout the traits and the mentality then too, is the other thing. I think, you know, you think about, they tried to do it from the outside, right? they lost Hassan Reddick and they tried to replace with Bryce Huff, and it just didn't work. He basically was a negative in the rotation, and Nolan Smith kind of took off. And so it shows how well they develop players from the ground up in their system and how well they've been able to draft. Obviously, Josh Sweat was another kind of fortuitous one. I thought I had a first-round grade on Josh Sweat that year, years ago, but he had some health concerns that dropped him, I think, to the fifth round with a knee that people thought would be degenerative. Turns out he's a beast and had 10 pressures and 3 sacks in the Super Bowl. So, I think that they just value the right type of player, the right traits at that position, pass rush athleticism, which, I talk about every year leading up to the draft. It matters so, so, so much, and they consistently take guys who finish very well in what I would consider the top pass rush athletic traits.
What was your evaluation on Cooper DeJean coming out of college, and what do you think about the year that he put together?
Yeah, I just thought he was awesome. I just loved his tape. I thought he was super aware. I think a lot of people didn't think he could play corner. And I just think people really kind of overvalue a little bit. They thought he was a little bit stiff. And I think people overvalue that just a little bit because, you'd like every corner to look sort of like Jaire Alexander and how they move. But the reality of today's NFL is that you're not playing man coverage a ton in today's league. There are certainly pressed times that you need to press and trail guys, and you need to be able to run, but you're not just purely matchup man all game long, in and out of the route stem, staying with guys. And I think people thought, oh, well, he can't do that at a high level, so he can't be really good in the NFL. Well, number one, he's in a very versatile defense now. He's also playing in the slot, which I thought was another part of his value, was that there was so much versatility there. And the biggest thing with DeJean, he just doesn't make mistakes. That's so rare for a rookie, but I just don't know if he's made a mistake. I've watched most of their games this year. I just don't know if he's made a mistake in coverage all season. He's just always in the right place, always reads out the route patterns correctly, always in the flat, hardly ever misses a tackle, which that position is just so, with how much zone defense you play, you basically need your slot to be a force defender against the run. All the flat concepts and screens and bubbles and tunnels the teams run, they have to be able to ID and trigger on those. They have to be able to get depth, just like he did on the interception, and take away routes down the field. You have to have great feel, and he just has all that stuff. So it was just a home run pick. The fact that he was there was, a mistake by other teams, I think, but just a home run pick for the Eagles that has really paid dividends for them this year.
On the other side, for the Kansas City Chiefs, we live here in this fear bunker kind of, John, right, in Buffalo, because the Bills can't get over the Chiefs, of course, and everything the Chiefs do is great and right, and all these great picks that they have that the Buffalo Bills don't, and no doubt they've hit on some. They also have a lot of misses, but was last night more for you like, man, one team just played great and was better and played great, and one team didn't have their best day, or was last night maybe some sort of indictment for anything on the Chiefs for you?
Yeah, I think it would be a little bit lazy of us in our analysis to not look at it a little bit more critically from the Chiefs, right? Because we talked about this last year, their process, when you look at how other teams are successful in the NFL, was certainly abnormal, not really prioritizing offensive tackle to the degree. I mean, they did sign Juwan Taylor, so I guess it's unfair to say that, but certainly having holes there, Donovan Smith was kind of a late signing that last year that just wasn't, nobody was picking him up or itching to get him. And so sort of being able to play on the margins on your edges on offense, and then obviously a wide receiver, that was where it was most notably talked about, which just seemed like there were some big gaps in there compared to how other really good teams were operating. And they got away with it, and they won a Super Bowl anyway because, Mahomes and Spags and Andy Reid and, when he needed to be, Travis Kelce were just that good. But I think they definitely ran that out as far as it could go this season. And I think if they don't shift, they're going to run up into more problems in the future. I think Veach has done a good job giving them kind of what they like. They've done a great job replacing talent in the secondary. That kind of got ran out a bit this year. They missed, L'Jarius Sneed wasn't L'Jarius Sneed this year for the Titans, but they missed a player like that. Jamari Connor just couldn't replace that skill set. The outside guys really struggled to replace what he gave them. They really could have used another really good corner. Joshua Williams was banged up. Jalen Watson has this really rough Super Bowl. So they just never really filled that hole. Pass rush-wise, I thought they did fine all season, but there were just too many issues at corner, which has been something they've been able to replace readily on this team, and too many issues at offensive line, to the point that they had to move one of their best offensive linemen to a position he wasn't even very good at, right, to try and make it work. So just too many big holes at key positions. Obviously, losing Rice to injury hurt, but you know, they had a great season, but I think ultimately the margins are really small when you get up against a really good team like this, and I think that they found that out the hard way in this game.
John Ledyard joining me here on the Wester Hotline, Audibles and Analytics Pod. You can find him on Twitter, at Ledyard NFL Draft. Let's talk about the draft. All right, so the Bills are in this space where, and of course, after last night, I think 31 other teams are saying, oh my God, we need to do what the Eagles did. And that's the prisoner of the moment. But here in Buffalo, it's true. I mean, every time they bowed out of the playoffs the last few years, it's pretty much been the same mantra of they have not been able to get enough of a pass rush. They have some nice players, Greg Rousseau, A.J. Epinesa, Ed Oliver. They took a swing on Von Miller a few years ago, but they kind of don't have that difference maker, John. This appears to be, from everything I've read, one of the better drafts for that area, whether it's defensive tackle or defensive end. Would you agree with that? Do you think there's going to be some pretty good talent available at 30, assuming the Bills are picking there?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's hard to know, this far out in the draft, like who's actually going to be on the board at 30, especially because the last couple of years we've seen a little bit of a run on edge defenders, or at least some of the more recent drafts, you've seen a little bit of a run on edge defenders as it gets toward the end of the first round.
Yep.
Because exactly what you talked about, those playoff teams that are drafting there are almost always looking to add to that position group because, yeah, I mean, you said prisoner of the moment, and I think it's like that for some people to realize that, but, I mean, this is something we talk about every year this time of year, like, because of what I laid out, like, the Chiefs, the Eagles, the 49ers, like, these teams are almost always really good pass rush teams, and if you look at criticisms of the Bills and criticisms of the Ravens, it's that they haven't been able to get that part of their defense over the top, I think, as you mentioned. So I do think that there'll be talent certainly in the back end of the first round still. It'll be interesting to see how many of these guys kind of stock rises. You can usually get a good feel for that during the pre-draft process, you know, whether a guy like Nick Scorton, who I think he's somebody who, traits-wise, I don't think is going to test that great. So I bet he falls down the board some. I think I've seen him in the teens. I've seen him pretty commonly mocked inside the top 20. I think he's going to be available late in the first round. So he could be one. Texas A&M edge rusher. Real good with his hands, but you wonder about the traits there. As I mentioned, obviously, I value that part of the game a lot. And you also just wonder what type of player the Bills are looking for, too, because a player like Shamar Stewart, if they are going to continue to go kind of heavy edge, Mikel Williams from Georgia, I think those are guys that fit that build if they're looking for sort of the frame more in the vein of Rousseau or Epinesa, some of the guys they've drafted. I don't know if, you know, Basham probably less likely to go right that route given how it worked out, but, you know, or if they're trying to go with a more explosive tee off and rush type of player, which I think would be wise, to be honest, but those guys with those elite traits often can go a little bit higher in the draft. So I think there's going to be options for them for sure. I think it's really a matter, what is the prototype? What do they think is successful? Are they going to value pass rush traits over some of the physical traits or run defense stuff? You know, I think that's going to be a key part of them kind of self-examining their evaluation process to try and improve some of their hit rates that they've had at that position.
I've heard people say this could be even a year you could double dip up front. There's so much talent available, especially, you know, into the, you know, second or third round type of value. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's players that you can – I mean, Landon Jackson's another one that fits the prototype, the Arkansas edge rusher, who I actually really like. I don't know how bendy he is, but he really has good hands to corner, and he's got just, like, an unbelievable frame, plays really hard. If Bills fans are interested, just because he fits sort of the prototype of players they've drafted in the past, I think his tape against Will Campbell, he didn't win every rep, and, you know, Will Campbell's obviously tough test, but Landon Jackson played a really good slate of college tackles, and sometimes he plays inside for Arkansas, but when he just got to be a pure edge defender, which is what I think he'll be in the NFL, I really think that some of his traits shown in that matchup, he had some really nice wins against Will Campbell. Now, he's not the bendiest guy. He can lose his balance going around the edge, so maybe there are some limitations there. How he tests is going to be really huge. But, yeah, there's guys certainly. Cal Kennard from South Carolina had some good flashes at the Senior Bowl. I think, you know, he's a player that's interesting. A little bit older, 23 already, but he's interesting to some teams, and there'll be players that certainly rise up the board as you go. So, yeah, I think there are definitely guys, even into day two in this class, who have been productive. It's just, I think if Bills fans are watching, watch during the combine and see how many of these guys test at a high level, mm-hmm. looking at explosiveness, the 10-yard split, the jumps, and then I think also the three-cone, just to see what the bend flexibility looks like for these guys. Because players with those high-end traits typically tend to go higher and tend to have more upside as pass rushers in the NFL.
The last several years, John, we've just seen this incredible group of wide receivers year after year. It doesn't seem quite like that this year from what I've seen. You've dug into it more than me. Is that correct that maybe you don't have quite the depth, especially early on at wide receiver, because that might be a spot where the Bills might look to add as well? I know Josh Allen just won MVP, but part of it is because people said he didn't really have a great cast around him.
Yeah, wide receiver is always a funny one because there's always so many there's so many to play in the league, and there's college offenses are using, you know, three or four now at a time and rotating guys. And so there's always so many that there's always going to be good players in a class, but it definitely doesn't seem like there's the high-end talent that we've had in some of the more special classes over the last couple of years, certainly. Last year's class was a good example of that too. And so, you know, I think McMillan has things that are really interesting with his size and his ball skills. I think even some of the speed that you rumors that you hear about him, but, you know, are the finer points of the game there. Luther Burden just had this kind of down year statistically. I think Matthew Golden is picking up steam a lot. He's a little bit slight in his frame, but I think his tape is really good from Texas. He's really explosive. Amika Egbuka from Ohio State is just kind of like the guy that everybody would love to get in like the second or third round, but is he going to go, in this draft, which isn't, thought of too highly, is he going to go really high? Kind of a glue inside outside guy who does everything cerebrally at a high level, even if he isn't like a special athlete at the position. So it is a little bit of a flavor. You will see guys that emerge too, even at the Senior Bowl. There was conversations, Jalen Royals and Jaden Higgins, like, are these guys going to be flying up the board? But yeah, definitely seems like a down year for most position groups, but I think definitely you're seeing that at wide receiver.
Where are you with the quarterbacks, and especially excuse me, related to the top of the draft, and maybe what Tennessee, Cleveland, and the Giants should all do?
Yeah, I mean, I there's really no rush, in my opinion, if you're some of those teams. The Giants are the one that clearly has the rush. But, I mean, if you're looking at the Titans, what's the big rush there? They just, unless you're thinking you're Callahan, but certainly if you're, looking at it from the new GM's perspective or the regime's perspective, it's going to be a long rebuild. They just spent the most money last year of any team during free agency and obviously finished with the first overall pick. So that's, very, very bad offseason. You have contracts like Calvin Ridley and Lloyd Cushenberry and some guys that you have to figure out what you want to do with because you spent money and you weren't really ready. Snead being another one of those guys that, you weren't really ready to spend that sort of money. You weren't really ready to compete like that. So for them, it's a long-term rebuild, I think. And so I would be trying to get better on the offensive defensive lines, which is what I expect they'll do. I'll be pretty surprised, I think, if they end up going quarterback, but we are so early in the process that we'll see. I think, the Raiders look like they're going to try free agency first. And so some of this, I think none of these teams want to go quarterback.
Right.
I would be surprised if anyone want to, but some of them, Sal, will just be, they have to. Like, what choice do the Giants have, for example, if they can't get Sam Darnold or anybody, and there's just so few options out there you can even talk yourself into this offseason unless something unforeseen happens, which is possible. We get one or two things every year, but like nobody wants to do Aaron Donalds or Kirk Cousins. Nobody wants that. But it's just like these teams have to like convince their ownership and their fans of something. And there are a couple right now that just kind of how it goes at the quarterback position that are just caught this year where there's not really free agents. There's nobody you want to really sign out there that can help you. But the draft isn't great either. And those teams would be best pursuing a path of patience, but that's not really an option for the Giants, right? I mean, Brian Dable's got to win this year. Joe Shane's got to win this year. And so those guys are feeling the heat, I think. And because of that, if they can't do anything at the top of the free agent market, and they'll try to make it, obviously they've got some things to make it look a little bit attractive with neighbors there and stuff. But, at the end of the day, I think if they can't do anything unforeseen with the players that are out there in the NFL, they're going to be one of the bigger locks, I think, to take a quarterback at the top of the draft because they just don't have many other options.
Is Shadur the best quarterback in this draft?
It's an interesting question. I don't know that I feel super confident in answering it at this time. I want to see some more tape, but I don't even know how much that's going to tell me.
Mm-hmm.
Both these guys have really odd demeanors in their game. Obviously, by the way, quarterback just being such a crapshoot to evaluate anyway. Look at, Bo Nix is better than Caleb Williams last year. Absolutely nobody thought that would be the case. We'll see what happens moving forward. But, I think Ward is just like, both these guys are so like laissez-faire in the pocket, just like so calm in their demeanor. And I think that can either be a really good thing or it can literally be their downfall in the NFL. Like they are unusually like Lamar Jackson-like calm in the pocket just at all times. And sometimes they take terrible sacks, put themselves in awful situations just because of how chill they are. But at other times, it like keeps them from panicking or making a really bad decision with the football. So they're really tricky to evaluate, I think. You know, Ward definitely has better traits than Sanders. Is certainly more of the prototypical from a size, arm strength perspective, what you're looking for. There's something about Sanders, and we'll see if, you know, kind of as the draft process goes on, he's going to be like one of the most interesting interviews because there's all this, you know, oh, he's spoiled, he's this, he's that. But then there's also this like really impressive side of him. So yeah. I think he's going to be like so polarizing to people. And that intangibles character part is massive for quarterbacks, and we don't get a lot of insight into that. That's the part I'd want to know the most about these guys, because they both need work, and so whoever would impress the team more in that area, I'd probably be inclined, because they're probably going to be close enough for me to see it that way. But yeah, I mean, there's some really unorthodox things to both of their process that I would be shocked works in the NFL if they keep doing it. So it's kind of going to be about who's able to weed some of that stuff out and keep the good stuff. And it's just going to be a complete, I think, toss-up between which one of these guys is better.
The two teams you cover and talk about the most, the Bucs and the Steelers, both on the Bills' schedule next year. Let's start with the Bucs. What's the number one thing they have to figure out this offseason?
They need to figure out how to play different ways defensively. They're exactly what we just talked about, Sal. They're just so dependent on blitzing, and they're the heaviest blitz team every year, them and the Vikings and Flores, wherever Flores is. And so, you know, and that's great to a degree. Like, there's games where they can dominate because of that and just completely disrupt another team. Coincidentally, Philly has had a ton of issues with them over the years. But, you know, they just get into too many matchups when you go through the playoffs where you can't succeed that way. You have to find ways to get pressure with four. And so I think that's a big part of their offseason. They haven't really – yeah, that's not really how they've built. You know, if you look at Todd Bowles' defenses over the years, they've really built from the inside out, a defensive tackle and linebacker. So my guess is their top, they have, you know, linebacker circled as their top need. Lavonte David's definitely fading. You know, he's 35. It's, you know, it's hard to, even if he comes back, it's hard to really count on him to be an every down, every snap type of guy. And so I think, you know, they don't have anything on the roster that's even playable outside of him. And so they need to prioritize probably getting, you know, maybe even two or three linebackers in the building, you know, at least two guys who can play probably, and look at a snap share for David this upcoming season. So I think that'll be their top need, top position going into the offseason.
Who is the starting quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers on opening day in 2025?
I don't think it'll be Justin Fields or Russell Wilson.
Wow, okay.
Here's what I think, and slash a little bit of what I've heard. I don't think they want to sign Russell Wilson. I don't think that's their first inclination, but they also are realistic enough to keep that line open, you know, to keep that line of communication open with him and his agent. Because, yeah, just if you look at the offseason, and there's a very real chance that nothing pops. You know, they're monitoring the Darnold thing. They're monitoring the Stafford stuff. Like, they're, you know, I think Geno Smith, they just recently, you know, they were like, we can win a Super Bowl with Geno Smith. So I think that's brought off the table. But they're monitoring all that stuff. But it just doesn't seem super likely that anything is going to pop right now, or that if it did, they'd be the top option. So I think because of that, they're just like, well, we can't go into offseason into next year with just Justin Fields. And they don't, I mean, the drafting at 21, they don't want to draft a quarterback in this class that they already did, that made that mistake with Kenny Pickett, just forcing a quarterback in a bad quarterback class. So they don't want to go that route either. I don't think they really even paid attention to the quarterbacks at the Senior Bowl. So my guess is they tried it. I think they'll bring back Fields for cheap. He wants to be back for sure. He's got a legitimate chance to start. And then it will be who pops free somewhere else. I think the Steelers, just people like playing for Mike Tomlin. That's a big deal to them. You know, I have my misgivings with Tomlin that I'm pretty vocal about, but people like playing for him, and that will matter if somebody does pop free in free agency or via trade. But if they're not able to make a move there, yeah, I mean, it might very well be Fields and Wilson again, just because there's no other options. But that, to me, is the only way that those guys would both return as options. That's not what the team wants to do at all. They're realistic enough to know that that might be their only choice.
As a guy who's followed them for so long, how far away are they from the top of the AFC North?
I just think they have one of the bleakest outlooks in the NFL. You know,
wow.
You can't account for what happens. You can't account for what happens with other teams,
right?
You know, like injuries and where fall off happens. You know, people thought the Bengals might be in the Super Bowl and then they don't even make the playoffs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's that part of it's hard to account for, but you know, if they won it, it would be like at a, you know, like this year, 10-7 at best, and there's just no upside in the playoffs, and you know, they just don't have any direction as a team, and that's part of the problem. Is right now they're just in this in between. They've got no process to like, okay, we need to, you know, stockpile more picks. We need to trade a TJ Watt, you know, which I know is crazy, and I know that fans don't necessarily want to hear that, but like, look at their team and look at Watt's age and tell me how, in what's left of Watt's prime, which he already dipped a little bit last year, like, what's left of that, are they going to be competitive? Like, you know, are they going to compete for Super Bowls? It's just hard to see a path to that, given where they're at. Offensively, they're totally rebuilding the offensive line. Their first-round pick last year, who I liked a lot, but Faiotano missed the entire season. Like, it just, where's the path for Pickens? Is somebody they could trade? You know, they can't stop having all these character issues, and the locker room that was once the most heralded thing has drama every single week. It's just, you know, it's hard to look at them and say there's a clear path forward. You look at the game's most important positions: quarterback, big question marks; wide receivers, huge question marks; offensive tackle, huge question marks. You know, pass rush, they actually have the, that's A plus plus, right? And they're still not at the top of the league in any of these pass rush statistics. How is that? How are they not even near the top with all the good pass rushers that they have? And so it's just too many corner. Like, that's an important – their corners were awful last year and the year before. And so they just have not found a way forward at so many of these key positions. And I think that that has really, really hurt the ability of this roster to even grow. And I like some of the young players, but there's just not enough of them, I think, to turn this thing around, especially with – I mean, quarterback and offensive coordinator are the most important parts, in my opinion, of any organization. You know, when you look at the on-field product, and I think they're just, like, bottom tier in both of those areas with Arthur Smith and whoever they have at quarterback. So those are just really hard obstacles to overcome if you're going to compete for division titles and championships.
John, I kept you long. I really appreciate it. I do have one more from an outsider's perspective. You had a really nice tweet about Josh Allen winning the MVP. It's been very polarizing. I'm glad that you tweeted what you did, and I think you were complimentary of it, but we've gone through a lot of toxicity here in Buffalo with Josh Allen winning the MVP. We're very happy, of course, but what were your thoughts on him taking home that award?
I mean, it's just completely deserved. I have no idea why people wouldn't have expected Josh Allen to win MVP. You know, right. I mean, certainly Lamar Jackson wouldn't have been surprising at all either, but it's really funny, Sal. People cannot in their minds accept the fact that multiple players are deserving of an award
right.
every year, almost. It's just, like, impossible for them to understand. And, you know, I think Lamar, if he would have won, I would have had a list of reasons why he should have won that were extremely easy to see. And with Allen, I think extremely easy to see. You emphasize the most valuable part, which is certainly totally fair. People are like, oh, they always just pick the best player. Nobody cares about most valuable. When you emphasize most valuable as part of this, which is a perfectly acceptable tiebreaker, considering it's the name of the award, I mean, how can you not make an argument that Josh Allen is the most valuable player? Like, he didn't have, I think, in a lot of ways, what Mahomes had structure-wise even this year. As much as we talk about the Chiefs maybe being flawed, like, he didn't have a Chris Jones. He didn't have the best coaching staff. As much as I like the Bills coaching staff, he didn't have Andy Reid and Spags, who might be the best two ever to do what they do. Like, he didn't have that. He didn't have as good a team as Lamar. He didn't have, and people think Derrick Henry is incredibly valuable and belongs in the MVP conversation too. If that's the case, how can you also say that Lamar Jackson was as valuable as Josh Allen then when he had Derrick Henry as a teammate? So there's just plenty of arguments for Allen to have won this award. It was not surprising to me at all. I was surprised that other people were surprised, but he was extremely deserving, and so was Lamar. And, you know, they're both sensational players, and if you don't have them in the same tier and at the top of the entire NFL, I think you're really missing the mark.
I love it. Great job. Thank you so much for joining me today. Sorry I kept you so long, but you know what? I always love our conversations, and hoping to catch up with you in Indy, my man.
Absolutely, man. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you got it. John Ledyard right there. Really good stuff. You can follow John at Ledyard NFL Draft on Twitter as well. All right, we'll take a timeout here. We'll come back, and want to get to a few other things. How about this? Oh, can I start looking to next year's schedule already? I mean, who's the opening night game? The Eagles. Who are they playing? The Bills do play the Eagles. But it's in Buffalo, so it's not going to be them. We can do a few other things as well as take more of your calls. 803-0550 on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
It's a 3rd and 16 for the Chiefs, and a shotgun snap from their own 24, rolling out of the pocket. Mahomes, line drive. It's intercepted at the 40. It picked off by DeGene, who comes to the near side, the 30. Got it back at the 20, breaks a tackle, the 10, the 5, to the pylon. Touchdown! Eagles have got a pick six. It's Cooper DeGene, a 37-yard pick six of Patrick Mahomes.
All right, that was Kevin Harlan on the call. That really kind of did it, right? I mean, kind of almost put the dagger in. Like, at that point, didn't that make it 24? Did that make it 24? Or was it right before that? Let me see.
No, that was 24.
That was 24, right? Once that happened, I mean, what a beatdown it was last night. Really. 40-22, the Eagles beat the Kansas City Chiefs. They are your Super Bowl 59 champions. You know where Super Bowl 60 is, right, Josh?
San Francisco?
Levi Stadium, San Francisco. That is correct. Do you know who grew up not far from there, right? Or at least kind of nearby region, right?
There's this. He's a quarterback, right?
The MVP of the league. Josh Allen. That's the storyline next year, right? There's two huge storylines from a Bills perspective next year in the NFL. Number one, can Josh Allen, now that he's won his MVP, got his individual piece of hardware, can he get the Bills to the Super Bowl in his home area? His home, now I can say hometown, he's not from San Fran, he's from Fireball, Northern California, though. Can he get the Bills to the Super Bowl and play that game there? That would be ultimate poetic justice for him to play there. But if he does, no matter how it happens, you know who is not there? The Kansas City Chiefs. Right now, starting today, February 10th, 2025, it is a mission of the entire AFC to not let the Chiefs get to their fourth straight Super Bowl and tie the Bills what was thought to be unbreakable record of making four straight Super Bowls in the 1990s. Can't let it happen. Those are the storylines next year. And by the way, the Super Bowl 60 odds have been released. All right, of course they have been, right? Come on. And this we're doing ads for all these for FanDuel all over the place. You see, if you turn on a radio, you turn on a TV, it's odds for everything going on these days, right? Well, of course they're going to have Super Bowl 60 odds already. Would you like to guess the top five? Here we go. Give me some NFL music. Let's play some top five. The top five. We'll keep it on because I got something after this. Okay. All right. Who are the top five in whatever order? Odds right now, according to, I got DraftKings here. I'm sure FanDuel does as well.
So you don't want me to get the order, just guess the top five?
Sure, if you do the order, it gets you bonus points.
Ooh, okay. All right, the order, I'm going to go Ravens first.
You're already incorrect.
Okay, well, then I'll just guess the five. All right, okay. Ravens.
Fourth.
Ooh.
At plus 700.
Okay. Bills.
Third, actually, all tied for second with somebody at plus 700.
Okay.
Ravens, Bills, and who's also tied for second?
Chiefs?
Yes.
Okay.
Chiefs, Bills, Ravens, all AFC teams.
Interesting. Okay, and then the other two are NFC then?
Yes.
All right. The Lions?
They're number five. Who's number one?
Eagles.
Yes, of course. Of course. Eagles are the Super Bowl favorite for next year. I also saw another... hold on. Let me see if I can... Hold on. I'm going to try and pull this up. Odds, Super Bowl... What would LX, right? Not LIX, Super Bowl 60 odds. Here we go. Okay. Now we got another one here. Here's BetMGM. Eagles 1 at plus 650, then Ravens 2 at plus 700, then Bills and Chiefs tied at 750, then Lions. But I will tell you this, at all these sites it appears, it is the same five and then a huge, massive drop.
I was going to say, it's kind of interesting to see the Lions up there, though, because of the fact that they lost Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn.
Right.
Like, I really think that that's going to do a number on them.
But you're going from plus 650, plus 700, plus 750, plus 850. The next is plus 1,300 to San Francisco. Like, that's the drop.
Who else is around San Francisco? Is it like, is that like another tier?
And then, and then there's another tier after that that includes the Commanders, the Packers, and the Bengals.
Ooh, I like the Commanders being up there.
I know. That's pretty good value, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, they were on fire this year. I don't think it's going to be the same next year, but who knows? If they hit on some of their picks.
This one here, this is DraftKings. You got Eagles, Bills. They got Eagles. Okay, here's another different one I found from DraftKings. Eagles, Bills, number two alone. Lions, number three alone. And then a huge drop to the Packers. Oh, no, this is why. I'm sorry. I'm looking at it wrong. Okay, sorry. Eagles and Chiefs are up top. Here we go. Eagles, then Chiefs, Bills, Ravens, all in a bunch. then Lions, then again, huge drop to Niners, and then Packers, Bengals, Commanders. Yep, this they're all the same kind of five, and then Niners, and then next tier. Okay, so the Eagles win Super Bowl 59. Here are their opponents for next year at home. Let's figure out who they should open up with. Let's create the NFL schedule, Josh, all right? As you know, the Super Bowl champion opens at home on Thursday night for a what's called a Sunday night football game because it's a Sunday night production. But it's Thursday night football at home. They're not playing in that Friday game internationally this year. They're playing Thursday night at home. Who will it be? You have. Here we go. They have eight possibilities. The Cowboys, the Giants, the Commanders, the Bears, the Lions, the Broncos, the Raiders, and the Rams. There are all some really good ones there.
Ooh. There's some great ones there, but it's going to be the Commanders, right? I mean, that's an NFC Championship rematch. I think it's got to be the Commanders. And it's a division rivalry. Like,
yeah.
I think there's something there. Lions, I think, is my second pick.
But who was it this year? Chiefs opened with Ravens. Last year, Chiefs opened with Lions. When is it a division game usually, though? Do they usually have division games?
That's true.
I need to go look at that. It has been, I think. But when... A lot of times, it's not a division game.
I mean, you go back one after that, it's Bills and Rams. I mean, that's a non-conference game.
Correct.
Like, there's...
So that's 22, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to 21. Cowboys, Buccaneers, non-division.
Yeah.
Hold on. 2020. Texans, Chiefs, non-division. Has not been a division game yet. 2019, Packers, Bears. But that was the NFL's 100th anniversary. That's why.
Oh, right.
That wasn't
right.
Because the Packers won the Super Bowl, obviously.
Mm-hmm. And the Bears certainly.
So that's right. Falcons, Eagles, after the Eagles won it the last time, non-division. Man, I'm going back here. Hold on. Chiefs, Patriots, nope. How about 2016? Panthers, Broncos, the rematch of the Super Bowl the year before. How about 2015? Steelers, Patriots, still no division matchups there.
Maybe they just don't do it then.
Packers, Seahawks, nope.
This is wild. I would have thought they did it once.
I'm going back to 2013 now. Ravens, Broncos, still no. Remember that one had to be changed location because of the baseball that was going on, right, mm-hmm. in Baltimore?
Yeah, right.
So let's go to 2012. Here we go. Nope, that's when they started on, it was different. It was a Wednesday night that year because of the convention, Cowboys, Giants. Okay, that was it. 2011, the Giants win the Super Bowl, right? They play the Cowboys to open the season on a Wednesday night. I think it was convention or something going on, whatever. So they moved it to Wednesday instead of Thursday, but that's the last time. It's only happened one time,
I think you could bring it back for this kind of game, though, because like I said, like that was. I think the Commanders didn't get as fair of a shake because of, I mean, not to say they didn't get a fair shake, but like, that game got out of hand quickly. Saquon Barkley had a great game. And
yeah.
I think they would like to see
how
the Commanders progress.
Highlight Jaden Daniels on the national stage early on, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And especially if the Commanders make big offseason moves. Like, I think that game has a lot of juice. But if it's going to be non-division, I think it's going to be the Lions.
I like the way you think. I'll tell you who it's not going to be. It's not going to be the New York Giants. I can't see it. I don't, right? I think you can make a case for almost any other team.
Probably
not the Raiders. Not the Raiders.
Unless they get Sam Darnold, that could be.
Yeah,
kind of fun.
I mean, but you're right. But I don't think so. You can make a case for the Rams rematch of that divisional game. You can make a case for the Broncos and Bo Nix and Sean Payton. Probably less likely, but you can make a case. Lions for sure a case. Bears for sure a case with their new coach with Caleb Williams. I like what you mean by Commanders, and I think the Cowboys are always just a draw. It doesn't matter. It could always be the Cowboys, right?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's a draw to see people, or if people want to see them lose by a
right.
lot, if they're gonna, you know, kind of blow it up this offseason.
Yeah, I'll tweet this out. Haven't used the Extra Point Twitter account very much lately, so I'm gonna try and log. If I still have my login credentials to the Extra Point Twitter account, I'll log into that. I'll tweet this out, and you can respond. You can find it at Sal Sports as well. I'll retweet it there. One segment left here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Josh, you gave me wrong information earlier. A.J. Brown made it 24-0. Cooper DeGene made it 17-0.
Oh.
It's okay, buddy. I'll forgive you.
It's hard. Hey, it's hard to keep track of that many points. I mean.
I love it. You're right about that. All right. Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. I did it. I tweeted out from the Extra Point Show Twitter account. And then I retweeted it at Sal Sports. Who do the Eagles open the 2025 season with on Thursday night? Here are their 8 home opponents. FYI, interesting, there hasn't been an opener against a divisional opponent since 2012. You got Cowboys, Giants, Commanders, Bears, Lions, Broncos, Raiders, Rams. I think Commanders fits the best if they do want to go to the divisional route. Well, I'm sure that Matt Bove and I will have Mike North on our Always Game Day in Buffalo podcast as we get closer to the draft, and I'll ask him about that. Like, do you try to steer away from that? Is there a reason for that? Is it random? He won't give all the goods because he doesn't want to, ruin who's going to be revealed as the opener, but we'll talk to him about that. Speaking of Always Game Day in Buffalo, Matt and I are going to record today, this afternoon. We'll recap this. We'll talk about the rumored or reported coaching changes on the Bills staff, including, by the way, Matthew Smiley, who I really didn't talk about at all today, reportedly parting ways with the Bills. The Bills were parting ways with him. Matthew Smiley, the Bills special teams coordinator, who a lot of people felt that was deserved and they should do that. But Sean McDermott had said at his postseason press conference that wasn't happening, but something obviously changed if that is indeed accurate. So we'll talk about that on the It's Always Game Day in Buffalo podcast. You can listen to that wherever you pod. You can also watch it on YouTube, at Sal Sports, by the way. Thank you all of you who've come to the Sal Sports YouTube page. Keep doing that. We're close to 12,000 subscribers. Lots of great content, Bills and otherwise, especially It's Always Game Day in Buffalo, at Sal Sports on YouTube. All right, real quick, Four Nations Faceoff. What is the schedule? When do they start? When's the first game?
Wednesday.
Who plays?
U.S. and Canada plays on Saturday in Canada, which is going to be, that's going to be a big game.
What time?
I think it'll be at like 7, probably, I'm assuming. I'm not sure.
At night? Yet. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the reason I ask like is, hockey. So I'm gone next week. I'm leaving for vacation. I'll be in South Florida all day Saturday and Saturday night. So I'll get to find a spot to watch that game. I'm going on a cruise.
I mean, it should be on every TV. That game is going
to
be
okay,
electric.
So I'll find a spot to watch that, no doubt. But I just want to know, because next week and then... Then we're gonna. What is that, like the last of the round robin games? That's got to be the last one then, right? If they start Wednesday,
I'm pulling up the schedule right now.
Okay.
The first game will be Canada versus Sweden.
Okay.
On Wednesday night at 8:00. So the championship game is, wow, it's February 20th. So they kind of jump around there.
Okay.
It doesn't sound like they're gonna do. Like, it looks like the round robin is it. Like, there's not going to be really elimination games. It looks like everyone's just going to play.
There you go. Yeah, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, and then Monday, Thursday is the championship. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, that should be fun.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about that a lot, I'm sure. Sabres Live up next. I'm sure they're going to be talking about it as well. And, of course, One Bills Live after that. Shope with the Bulldog at 3 o'clock. I'm going to join Mike Shope and the Bulldog today at 4 p.m. here on WGR. Have a great rest of your day. The Chiefs, they got buried in the Super Bowl. Have a great Monday, everybody.